So welcome, everybody. Today's topic from my side is why uni places to choose to use Golang. I'm going to get you a little introduction to the reasons and basically to our stack, tech stack, and the entire flow of decision making for going into that new language. I don't know how many of you guys know Golang until now. Some might have already experience with it, some maybe not. I'll be trying to be a bit more high level on that, just to cover everyone in that case. So first, a few words about who I am. So I'm the current CDO of UniPlaces. I've been working for basically 15 years in the web industry. The larger part of my career happened to be in Germany. I went to Asia for a while after that, and then came back to Europe to join UniPlaces, which happened in June this year. And what I'm going to talk about is basically going to get you a short introduction, like an overall view of the reasons and all the points I want to mention here. And I'm going to tell you about our internal needs, because of course that thing is very much, my presentation is very much connected with our environment, right? And all of you guys do have your own environments, your own companies, your own tech stacks. So I'll be trying to get that connection between what we have, okay? Also, the challenges that we see coming up in the future, which are basically the main reasons for going into new language, all right? Very much connected with what we have as a stack right now. And then the solution of these, or the solution to these challenges, which is easy to detect right now, is the choice of a new language is going to be the Golang, okay? Eventually, there will be a short excursus about something that I consider the most exciting part of Golang. I will explain and stay excited about what's going to be. Okay, so just a short introduction. Well, the motivation of going into a new language here in that case is very much driven by our current situation, all right? So with us, and I'll be happy to explain the stack later on, with us going or using a specific a technology stack, using PHP as a language as the main choice here, and also putting our basic or our entire logic into, or based on PHP, the intention to go into something new is basically to have a complementary solution to what we have right now. So to you guys, I don't know how many of you guys are working with PHP and are aware of the limitations there. If you grow and if you scale, if you really want to go big, because that's what we're planning to do, right? I mean, UniPlaces shouldn't be forever as small as it is. So there is a quite ambitious plan. And so the main motivation here is to find something that is complementary to what we have right now, okay? That can take over parts of our business logic and do it much better than what we are doing right now, okay? So let's talk about the needs that we have right now. Basically, what I want to show and say is what a company like us, or probably any other IT company, at least these guys are working in the web industry, but I think it's a pretty obvious and pretty general view here of things, what we're striving for. I mean, everyone that is in that business is an engineer, or that is in charge of making decisions there. I'm sure, very familiar with these things. Thinking about stability, quality, how do we get there? Unit tests, or whatever you can think of to reach these cornerstones of highly qualified development or application creation. Also, scalability is a big aspect here. So, of course, we're striving for these things. We want to go big. We want to have an infrastructure that is scalable and extendable as easy as possible. And also, we're taking a look at standards. We want to give the developers or engineers a way to feel safe and secure in the daily flows. Be able to lean on given structures and rules pretty much. And also, thinking about flows, there's like a lot of things that you could put into consideration here, Scrum or whatever there is. All the methodologies that are interesting for us. So this is what everyone is basically striving for. Taking a look at the situation of a startup company where you have a lot of questions to answer of that kind, these are basically the very initial targets to follow or to reach or to aim for. But of course, there's something much bigger that we are striving for. So what is the real thing that we want to do here? I mean, this is the technological part, but basically, we want to be cost efficient, right? Because that's what it is. If you're not cost efficient, we're going to fail. If you take a look at modern companies of nowadays, and I'm very happy to be able to say that there's the focus is pretty much clear to be set towards the capabilities of the product or engineering department. Okay, people are very aware of the meaning of this department, which is good to know. I've recently heard something at I think it was at Facebook where it was said that 50% of the stuff has to be engineers. It was Google. I'm sorry, I have to say that. It was Google. Pretty much the same. There's no difference. So an interesting aspect. So cost efficiency is the big thing. And cost efficiency comes also with the aspect of time efficiency, right? Cost and time is pretty much connected in some ways. So that's what we're really striving for. We want to be cost efficient. We don't want to lose time in maybe being in performance. Okay, so basically, we want to grow. With these two things, with the other things I've mentioned before, we can. But having this in mind is a big high level topic. We can grow, and that's what we're going to go to. That's about UniPlaces, right? And there's one thing I have to mention as well. This is that one here. Okay, so. I'm absolutely convinced that happiness is a seriously meant aspect here. Okay, with me being part of different engineering teams and leading guys and experiencing different feedback moments where people were simply unhappy because of not being very committed with the language that they use, not being very committed with the environments that are going on, or with the processes that are there. So getting these three done, that can be very helpful for, okay? So one of the major aspects from my side is make people happy. And that also, you will find it out, is basically not one of the reasons, but a very strong reason for going into a new technology, right? Going beyond that frame that we have set up for a long while and reaching for new frontiers. So how do we get there? From an engineering side, of course, there's optimizations that you can introduce, improvements of different kinds. Taking back the view to PHP in our case, there's a zillion things that you can introduce to get your performance optimized and improved and get a better throughput and whatever you can think of. But maybe setting up the connection to what I said before about happiness. Giving people a permanent challenge by doing something they have not done before, by introducing new skills, simply by hiring new people that are knowing about these technologies, and upskilling people that are in-house already, giving them a chance to enlarge their horizon. Okay, so that's going very much along with mental growth, right, and happiness eventually. So. With that being said, I'd like to take a look at our current challenge by describing the stack that we're in right now. Okay, what are we using? Maybe seeing a few things about that in relation to others, and giving you a better view at why we have made the decision to go into something else or something new. So let's take a look at our stack then. That's some things in our front-end tier. As you see, there's a couple of technologies and frameworks, or whatever you want to call this, it looks a bit crowded, but it's not that heavily crowded. There's companies that are even worse than that. It's not bad, just to say this, right? Because all these things are doing their job. And they're there because they're needed, to do their job. But if you think of, and I'm sure you guys have seen a lot of stacks shown, there's a lot of companies doing much, much, much more than that. So with that being considered, you can say, well, there's space for introducing something, okay? And if we're going to show you the next slide, that's our middle tier, you know, it looks quite empty. Okay, so PHP, as I said before, as the main language for our implementation. Then we use a framework, Symfony framework here for, you know, for our application's creation and structure. And other than that, there's a search engine called Sphinx. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this. There's others on the market. There are specific reasons for us for using that. So I'm not going to dive too deep into that. Okay. But if you might, and if you have questions about the reasons, I'm happy to explain. Some of you guys might know Solr as an alternative to that, or any other engines. And, you know, lastly, there's Nginx that we use also. Okay. Not a big deal. Seems quite clear here. We have Python in use as well. But I'm not mentioning it because it's not like not so well included in our development frame. Okay, it's about deployment in that case. That's our backend here, just for just to complete that view. We use DynamoDB here and MySQL. For specific reasons also, architecturally. So don't be surprised. Does anyone of you know about DynamoDB? Ever used that before? Great thing to go for, quite expensive. AWS. It's extremely optimized for reading. It's not only SQL solution, all right? But we use MySQL we use MySQL to get data provided to Sphinx, because Sphinx is not able to connect to DynamoDB, okay? Otherwise, we wouldn't use that, very likely. No, okay. And there's another thing that we do. You can imagine, so if we use Sphinx, and we use MySQL, we want to transfer data from here to there, okay? And that's one of the later to be mentioned issues and reasons why we need something being very performant and very fast to do that, right? Just showing that. So, anyways, let's take a look at this. Are we performant? Are we scalable? Right now, I'd say we are, okay? But that thing has to be considered in a very relative aspect. Because, I mean, we might be performant today with the load that we have. We might be even able to, you know, cover whatever needs might be coming up in the next year or half a year. But what's going on, what's going to happen in 1 or 2 years, you know? So, of course, you know, and all the, let's say, all the ambition that we have about, you know, growing much, much bigger than we are right now, of course we're going to reach limits with that stack that we have. So just repeating what I said before, PHP is great. It's a great language. You can do a lot with this. You can extend that pretty easily. And, like, you know, there's many, many reasons to go for PHP, as well as, you know, for other languages. But once you have made the decision, you're going to be reaching a limit, okay, at some point. So now the question is, like, considering a trade-off, okay, meaning if we want to continue being scalable or even enlarge that scalability capability, are we going to introduce something? Are we going to, like, optimize our current stack by introducing new tools, new flows or new software, God knows what, right? Are we going to be pragmatic and say, well, you know, we can reach, like, a 15% boost of our performance right now with the introduction of these things, or we're going to get, like, a 35 or maybe a 45% boost by introducing something new, right? That is coming with a lot of improvements from another perspective. But it's, you know, it's a pragmatic thought, okay? So pragmatic also in relation to how much effort does it, you know, get us, or how much does it, you know, block us in terms of getting to that point of being successful with the introduction of a new language. Anyways, so what's the problem? We could go for it, right? So let's take a look at the situation. Why are we introducing a new language, or a new technology in that case? I want to show you I want to show you an excerpt of things that might be done right now for us, you know, to be more performant or better in what we're doing. As you see, there's 1 million things that you can do about PHP. Okay, just getting you some examples. Of course, you can go for a new version, Nice. Great boost. I don't know the numbers. You guys probably know better than I. How much faster it is than the 5 version. And you can go for more caching. You know, you can go crazy about caching and introducing whatever. I don't know if you guys know about reverse proxies or you know, like Redis key value storage caches, blah, 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 blah. So there's like a long, long story to be, you know, to be told about that. And of course, you're going to be achieving something with this. Thinking about the next point, just-in-time compilation. I mean, you know, HHVM, Facebook, wow, crazy. You know, hip-hop, super thing to do. It's deprecated right now, as you guys know. How much would that bring? How much, you know, work would that bring for us to be, you know, to be ready for that in terms of PHP? Thinking about other things, finding leaks, doing profiling, you know, going the entire flow, checking what's going on there. But, you know, being more focused on profiling. I don't know how important it is for you guys, you know, watching that, but I consider it extremely important. There is actually no way around that than going into detail by profiling and finding memory leaks or whatever kind of leaks. And many, many, many more. Apart from that, I don't know if you have ever seen a work, well, like considered the solution that is also available in PHP world to go into a boss worker model, you know, splitting the task into multiple subtasks and get workers in place and therefore have something like a parallelization, okay, for your bigger processes or tasks. Also, the method, like you know, the introduction of threads is possible in PHP. We could do that. It's quite low level, you know. Got a lot of pain doing this, and I mean, you wouldn't like to do that, right? Manually. There's other languages supporting that, and so on. So you know, the aspect of threads, you know, is a big topic, definitely. You know, all the languages that are all available, right? But the question is, I mean, just getting back to the point that I said before, the trade-off. Question is that worth it? No. Do we really want to do this? Yeah, we want. We want to achieve much more. No, we want to get much more, way beyond that. So let's talk about that. The ends justify the means. So being, let's say, you know, being part of nowadays or contemporary technology, you could say, you know, it's kind of nice to use one technology, PHP or whatever, but why sticking to it? You know, why being so narrow-minded? I mean, we know reasons for those that do hiring or that do, you know, take a look at the employee markets, you know, and are interested in finding new talent. Of course, there is constraints towards other languages, financial constraints, you know, thinking about salaries, whatever. You want to hire someone for a rare language, you are forced to pay more. If you hire someone for PHP, you're not forced to pay more. So that's usually one of the first languages to be chosen. I mean, we could also talk about JavaScript and Node and whatever is there. But let's say we're not considering that fact of being forced to stick to this. We just say, whatever comes to solve the problem better, we're going to go for it. Okay? So use the right tool for the job. That's the thing. So what's the job for us? Okay, I did not show too much about our architecture, infrastructure, or whatever. But I want to point out some things. So, okay, you guys might not know, but you know, we're using internal APIs for communication between our different platforms. All right? We have a core platform, we have like many other platforms that are communicating with it. We do that, it's fine, it works. We do this with PHP, of course, we do this with Symfony and a couple of bundles that are doing that job. But it's not optimal, all right? And we get there, we see that there's a lot of things happening that are slowing us down, okay? And another thing is, I mean, what are these things? Are these things like, you know, provided libraries that we're not going to change, and they're simply slow because they're slow, you know, due to the fact that they're just written by someone that we're not controlling? Do we want to build our own libraries for that? So, thinking about the situation and maybe like the let's say the range of optimization towards that or in this, it's quite small, right? Because we're bound. We're stuck in this situation. We could, of course, rebuild our architecture and say, okay, we use other tools, and as I said, we can build our own libraries, whatever. But the output is, or the outcome is, you know, is unpredictable. And as you guys might imagine, if you create something new, and we're saying, if you, you know, making something new does not mean making something better. It just means something, right? Eventually, you're going to solve the issues that you've made before, but you're going to create new issues. Of course, you will. So do you want to risk this? Of course, that is something that is also connected with the fact of the introduction of a new language, right? Because you will be necessarily creating something new. But then the question is, how can you build it? How easy is it for you to build something new? Okay, which is a very important aspect for a language selection or for a technology selection. Okay, how easy is it for you to use it? How steep is the learning curve here? So, as I said, we want to be able to, you know, rapidly expand our APIs, you know, to grow bigger and bigger because there's more and more requests and expectations coming in. We want to be highly performant. That's, you know, an indisputable fact. We want to continue being performant, but also improve that. And we want to be more granular in our APIs. So we want to be providing, just think of something about like microservices, you know, like some smaller chunks of, you know, services that we can just, you know, launch and get in place for a specific set of needs. All right. Next thing is, you guys might remember what I said before with that data transition from DynamoDB to MySQL. That is a big thing for us. This is given by the entire architecture. So there's constraints. And now there's another trade-off to be made. Are we going to, you know, to drop that thing? Are we going to replace Sphinx or maybe, you know, enrich Sphinx by providing a DynamoDB connector? We could do that, you know. But that in comparison to the improving of, you know, big data transformation here, by utilizing another tool, utilizing another, you know, a solution, you know, might be a loss. Okay, so we probably are attending more, very likely, and that's not a proven thing, but it's like a feeling. Of course, you know, sometimes you have to make decisions based on whatever input you get, but also a little bit driven by your internal feeling as well as your experience, right? So with that, I'm currently sure the trade-off is better towards, you know, taking another language than, you know, going for crazy Sphinx DynamoDB connections, okay? As an example, there's other reasons for using ETLs in our case. One last thing that I have to mention here is, it's quite, you know, strange to mention in that context, but I don't know how much you guys know about UniPlaces. We are not there yet to provide a mobile solution, okay, like a dedicated mobile solution. We are on our way to get there. Right now, with us growing and, you know, all the reasons that are internally known, that aspect becomes extremely important for us. And there's a solution, and it's a great thing. There's a solution in Golang world that gets us something that we can use as a centralized implementation layer for any operating system in the mobile world. Okay, that means we're going to reduce the effort, you know, to build something, to place and implement business logic at one place instead of doing this at different places at the same time by hiring many more people, you know, getting different solutions for the same issues. And ending up with non-cost efficiency and non-time efficiency. So it sounds like, you know, a strangely added thing to that, but it's very important for decision making. So it comes like a little, so you guys, you know, like, you have a little cake and you put something on top, so, you know, this is a little cherry on top of that cake. So it's good to have that. If it wouldn't be there, it would be still all right. So, well, why do I think that a new technology is the right tool? Well, basically, it's a longer story. I mean, I've picked up some of the things here already, and I really want to emphasize the aspect about, you know, satisfaction and, you know, and like motivation within the team and getting people something that they can really, really be amazed about, which you guys can probably imagine or have experienced, you know, happens to, you know, to be neglected, you know, after a while. Because, you know, if you work with a technology, work in a company, there's even very well, let's say, numbers or analysis there where you see, okay, people are, you know, working for a company for like 1 or 2 years, especially in web business, and they, you know, they get bored. And so there's, of course, there's a lot of things that you can put into that, fighting that aspect, you know, making people motivated. But you know, that could be a question from my side towards you guys. So what do you think we can do in order to, you know, to keep the satisfaction, you know, to get people excited? IT guys, I'm just saying, it's a very sensitive plant, an IT guy. You know, you got to water it quite often. So you know, that's how it is, because people need to, you know, be fed with new things, with interesting stuff, you know, continue being amazed. And that's one of the tools, right? You can introduce, like, you can get for salary raises, and you can get for sending people to you know, conferences, and everything is cool, and we're totally nice and everything. But you know, I think it's very much in the detail of the work, right? Moving people from one task to the other, from one topic to the other, it's still the same language, it's still the same framework. You know, there's things well known after 2 years. And you want to keep these guys, because if someone leaves after 2 years, it's a great loss, especially for us, right? It's unacceptable to, you know, to let someone go after 2 years. Just saying. Loredo,
one of our, yeah. You, Dan, on Uni Places, you had a sense of community, because you had a common challenge.
Yes.
To change the language. So all the team brought in, it's not just to motivate that guy, it's all the team.
Yeah. I think, you know, eventually you're going to have, because, you know, we are forced to hire new guys for that, because we were forced to have experts on that. But there's upskilling going on internally, and there's new knowledge brought in, and people are aware of that new thing going on, okay, that motivation. And as you say, there's many, many minds involved, definitely. Even if they're not working on that, they're still aware that there's something new to come in. And I mean, just as a very short excursus to that, there's also other languages, other things that we're introducing, like frameworks that are new to us. Okay, we've recently sent someone to another company, to another country, just for him to learn about that new framework. You know, which is a great motivational impact, because that guy just, you know, got the chance to, you know, to be in a completely different environment, and I'm sure he's extremely motivated. And when he comes back, you know, he's gonna, you know, push it to the right direction. So there's, as I said, there's a lot of different things to, you know, to go into that. One thing, well, I'll just have it on my list here. You know, like the permanent need for flexibility is, of course, a major aspect there as well. Go is new. That's cool, right? I mean, new things are cool always. But why not using something else but Golang? Java, Python, Node.js, I don't know what you guys are working in. These are all cool things, definitely. I mean, they're old, but they're cool. Node is not that old. So, taking this into comparison with PHP, they're faster than PHP. All of them are faster. I'm not going to show any benchmark to that. You guys take your time, read about it. Benchmarks, there's tons of them. Never trust a benchmark that you didn't do yourself. So there's, you know, that's, you know, let's say it's not to be disputed that these things are faster. But when you take a look at, let's say, not the main purposes, but like the main features of these languages, and some were created to be efficient in compilation. Well, none of these. Some were created to be efficient in execution, okay? C, all right? And some of them were created to be, you know, to be easy in terms of programming. Language or interpreted languages, you know, Python, PHP. I'm having Java there, by the way, because it's compiled and interpreted. You guys know, I guess so. Node.js, right? I was recently asked why not going for Node.js, but going for Go. I said, no idea. Node.js is cool, you know, but Go is cooler. that's the only thing I can answer there. I mean, you know, it's just a decision making. And I could have another, I mean, I could actually do the same talk, and I could, like, you know, advocate Node.js here and say, look how cool it is, right? Okay. So, I have more to say. Okay. Well, so the solution is, and now we're getting there, is to introduce that new language finally, right? Let's go for a new language. What factors are we considering when we take a new language? When you guys, I don't know what situation you've been in, but let's think you are willing to, you know, to found a company. You know, like, you're the first one in the IT, CDO, of course. And then you say, hey, guys, from now on, we're going to take that because I like it. Or because I did that for last years. I think it's wrong to say it that way. Of course, you know, it's somehow good because of your experience in this. But there's very clearly defined reasons for, you know, what language to choose. And I want to pick up that reasons. First, popularity. Let's get this in relation with Go. What would you say? Is Go popular? What does popularity mean?
Well, popularly, like, you have a big community that probably would solve your problem. So you have a backtrack or a
yes.
That will help you
yes.
In implementation solve your problem.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Exactly. Now, if you take a look at Go in relation with other languages, I mean, you know, Go, and we'll say this later on, has been found or created between, I have to say, 2007 and 2009. Java, 70s, I think. C, 60s. That's, you know, that's another thing. So talking about popularity, these languages have survived, you know, for given reasons because there were no replacement. But they're, of course, they're popular, and for the reasons that I said before, you know, the ease of programming. Languages like PHP are extremely popular. But now take a look at what's going on with Go. What is going on with Go in the last, like, you know, just have a look at the frame of, what shall I say, like a year or two. This thing is exploding. Okay, there's a lot of given, let's say, there's a lot of solutions being created to given problems in Go. People are, you know, shifting their stuff into Go. I mean, let's talk about Docker. You guys know Docker, of course. Ooh, cool thing, really, really cool. It's written in Go, right? Many other big things. Just keep that in mind. So popularity, I think we can make a check here. You know, it's popular. People are going crazy about it. That's what I believe is popular. You know, what is this? No, forget about that. Language domain match. That basically means we have a problem. Okay, we have an issue that we want to solve. That's the domain. And how much does the language match this? You know, that domain. How much can we achieve with that language in relation to that domain problem? To the domain. With that, things that I've said before, you know, these needs. That's the way how I called them. Being defined. Which are basically very clearly, say, decoupled modules that we want to do. Go is perfect for. Okay, Go is perfect for these kind of things. Go is perfect for tooling. You know, Go is perfect for APIs. If you want to read about that, it's going to take you, you know, 5 minutes to build an API with Go. No big deal. So with that, I believe we are matching perfectly. Another check here. All right. Availability of libraries. I'm going to have another slide about that later on. But, well, that's a quite short story. One of the biggest, let's say, advantages of Go is its library size. Like, the built-in standard library is simply, you know, covering. Okay, so almost all of the, you know, daily issues that you have, problems that you want to solve, you can solve with the standard library, right? I would consider this checked with Go. Efficiency. Yeah. Check. It's definitely more efficient than PHP. And it was built for efficiency, right? There's a longer talk by one of the creators explaining how much better that is in comparison with C, for example, when it comes to compilation. Okay, what these guys did to work on for a long while to get it improved, okay, in relation to C. So that's one point of efficiency. We have slightly discussed the aspect of performance. It is faster, another efficiency aspect, all right? And there's also things that I'm going to pick up in terms of, you know, like daily integration flows and stuff. I'm going to explain this in a few minutes. Expressiveness. When I write the code, is it like human readable? You know, is it easy to understand what I'm writing there? It is. Go is also, you know, created with the aspect to be easy, you know, to be easy to write and to be easy to read. It has 25 keywords. 25 keywords. Pick any language that you know, and I'm sure it's way, way, way more than 25 keywords. There's one kind of strange aspect. It's also something that I think Dave is the first name, Pike, one of the creators, said languages, the older languages, I mean, we have like new versions of C coming out, C11 or whatever. What they do is they introduce new stuff, new solutions or problems. And other languages that are leaning on these languages, let's take PHP maybe in relation with Java, these guys, it seems like these guys are like kind of following the track and trying to copy the other guys and say, okay, now we're getting grown up, okay? I'm having permanently the feeling, thinking of PHP, that now we're getting a grown up, okay? Now PHP does that, and it was not doing this before, but now it does it. How great is that? But why not think about something new? Why not simplifying the language instead of making it more complex? So, trying to cover things that have not been there before. Why do these things need to be there? That's another question. Okay, so getting back to that point, expressiveness, yes, Go is expressive. And with every one of you guys, reading about Go and trying to learn it, I'm promising, if you're a smart mind, which I believe you are, you're going to learn it like 2, 3, 4 weeks. You're going to understand the language. You're going to be able to write it, okay? If you're developers, anyways, anyways, simpler. Okay, project size. I have, mentioned that in the context of language domain match. We have these tiny things, and Go is good for that. But Go is also good for big projects, right? It is, by the way, I have not mentioned that before, it is not object-oriented, okay? Go is not object-oriented. Requires a little bit of a switch mentally. If you want to work with it. But it's also good for bigger projects because it's simple to write, simple to control. Tool support, the last one here, that's actually about, is there enough tools to use that language? So stuff like IDEs or any other supportive additions, plugins, whatever you can think of. Well, Go doesn't need much more, or does not need many tools, let's put it like this. You might use an IDE, but you could use Vim if you like. Well, go for an IDE better. So you get auto completion and stuff, but that's it. You don't need any additional things because the libraries are there and everything's built in, right? So eventually, the solution is that guy here, Gopher. Yeah, they're making a big thing out of this, having different gophers looking different in all the countries and so on and so on. So I wanted to pick it up. Okay, so let's get closer. Why Go? As I said, it's new and that's cool. That's definitely cool. But it also has something very important. So we have the aspect of simplicity. I'm going to get into this in a few minutes. I said it before, 25 keywords and many, many other things. It has a nice set of characteristics. I'm happy to show which are the ones that are really liking later when you want to go for Go. It has a big standard library. We said that before. And it has some great set of tools. Tools for like daily work. Stay excited. CI capabilities. And the performance aspect. Okay. Firstly, before getting to all these things, I want to just have a little overview. Just a few facts, not too much. Okay, so it's interesting to see 2007 and 2009. Some places are writing 2007, 2009, but it's like in between that time, 2008, I've also heard. It's coming from Google. There are these guys, three have heard that guy speaking recently. And it's a compiled language, statically typed, and it's C-like. Okay, so it's C-like, has some aspects, but it's much better than C. Yeah, I have to say that because you need to take care of one major problem of C, garbage collection. Yeah? It's magic in Go. Don't even think about it. It's there. I still don't want to, you know, I mean, I see me advocating Go, but I don't want to convince you guys of that language. I'm not selling that in any way. So I'm just describing my experience with it. And yeah. So that's an introduction to what I'm going to say. So Go combines efficient compilation, efficient execution, and the ease of programming. If you guys remember what I said before, these three things are well spread over all the languages, and some are doing this, some are doing that, but Go does combine all of these because it was created with that, you know, with that knowledge in the background. It's a great advantage. I mean, Go has simply that advantage of being a new language. So there's a long, long range of experience there and behind, and people knew what's the issues about languages, you know. So these three guys just made the right decision, in my opinion, you know, to kind of dense things or shrink things, take off things that are useless or that are problematic. Let's look at the simplicity. Okay, 25 keywords, I said that, like function, blah, blah, blah. There's no classes or anything. There's in fact interfaces, I'm going to say it later. Clear visibility definition. So basically, it's if you have something publicly available or private or unavailable publicly, there's two ways of doing that. Use either a capital letter or a lowercase letter, the first. That's it. Okay. Dependency management. How to introduce or how to import libraries. There's an import statement. That's it. Okay. So you use your packages by importing them. And you have packages available. So you create packages that are importable by other packages, other places. And that's it. So seems to be quite easy. Gets a steep learning curve because of that, just because of this. Characteristics. Strictly typed. Could be good or bad. I'm not sure, as I said, not sure what you guys are using the language. For PHP wizards, that might be an issue sometimes. Because PHP, as we know, maybe, is not statically typed, or strictly typed, I'm sorry. You have type hinting and so on. It helps you to organize your code, but it's not necessary to be done. Go wants you to do so. If you don't do it, it's not going to compile. Okay, that gets you into some other issues, especially when you're new to that language and you like me, for example, coming from PHP world, I got into trouble a couple of times. Structs, I don't know if you guys know structs, beautiful means to organize your, let's not call it objects, but data transporting entities. Okay, beautiful way of doing that. And Go comes with something interesting also. It gets you something like an inheritance possibility, so you can cascade your structs, which is great in order to organize reoccurring attributes, pretty much. Area slices and maps, good. Separated, you use the right tool for the right thing. Okay. Something that gets people very much into trouble is the multiple return values. PHP does not do that. I don't know that much about other languages in that case, I'm sure. But Go does it. Yes, it's good or bad. Depends how I work with this. Interfaces, so although it's not a object-oriented language, it gets weight to declare your sorry? Exactly. Yeah, very much the way you would define an interface. It's exposing the interface, the gateway to your class or package. Something beautiful is the Go routines and channels. I will get into that later. That's about organizing your that's like the major aspect having the largest impact in terms of performance. And that garbage collection thing, okay? It's there out of the box, it's taking care of everything that comes along with this. No need to take care of memory leaks or anything, it's just, you know, going well. Standard library, just put this under brackets because, of course, I mean, necessary functionality is part of CentralDB. Who knows what's necessary for you, okay? If you want to connect with DynamoDB, it's not there, okay? You have to go for another third-party library, of course. But stuff like, you know, encoding, decoding, XML, JSON, it's called marshalling in that case. It's there, you know, building an HTTP server, 3 minutes, if at all, okay? Testing is there. You use your testing library, it's already there. No need for any external things. Hard drive access, all fine. So.
It's time.
am I done?
Well, you are 10 minutes behind.
Am I?
But since it's lunchtime.
Are you guys interested in more? I have like an hour more. some slides. I'm sorry.
Okay,
so. Yeah, I mean, it's up to you. You can go if you want or you can stay. It's up to you. Okay. Cool. So, tools. Go format. This thing gets you into the right structure. Okay? So if you make, coding standards, nice thing to take care of. You know, there's always some pressure. You make it nice and whatever. But with Go format, you don't take care about this because you run the tool and it puts it into place. You know, so you can make mistakes as much as you want. Don't care. It just happens. Go test, as I said. It's just there. You can, you know, unit testing, whatever you want to build, is there. Just run the tool to get it. Also, something called Go benchmark or test benchmark, which is a built-in solution for performance downtakes or upgrades in relation to in comparison to the version before. You can run that. GoDoc is something to create documentation for for your code that you've created automatically, and many more. CI capabilities, because it's compilable, you can deploy a single After Effect. It's cross-platform compilable, not a big issue here. And there's no virtual machine needed. So out of the box, just put it on the target machine, okay? Just put it there. It's going to do its business. Okay. That's clear. The compilation time is short, as I said before. Performance. Nothing to say about that, okay? Just get there. So, what is the main aspect of our performance in Go? It's concurrency. Okay, so it's cool with the compilation time and all the nice things that I've mentioned before, but this is the clue about Go. You know, if you want to do something that requires concurrency, go for Go. Don't go for anything else because it is designed for concurrency. Okay, let's go for the excursus if we have the time. Do we have the time? Because I will be done right now. The excursus is about concurrency. You want to learn about concurrency, or do you guys know about concurrency? Yeah. Someone better than me, very likely. No, just guessing. Okay, so, anyways, I'm going to be trying to be very quick. Doing more than one thing at the same time. Same time is to be considered relatively here, okay? Because same time means actually parallelism, okay? But concurrency contains or may contain parallelism. Just saying that. Let's think of threads in that case, okay? Multi-threading. A lot of languages support multi-threading. I can even do multi-threading with PHP. Multi-threading as the solution to the methodology of parallelism. Parallelism can be achieved by having a multi-core system, right? So there you have the hardware limitation going on. So concurrency is not just threading, not just parallelism, and that's a nice thing that I've pointed out here. Yeah, so we have an issue, right? We have a timing, we have a communication issue. We don't know where things are going to end and stuff. Quite easy to see. So the threading is an issue because of the simultaneous shared data access, which is hard. You know, you have like bottlenecks going on there. And it's non-deterministic, right? Race conditions. So what's going on? I said that. It's not only for parallelism. Let's get you a little, can you read that? Okay. Concurrent multi-threading systems give the appearance of several tasks at once, but they're actually split into chunks, okay? Shared processors. So actually, the idea of concurrency is another one than the idea of a parallel system, because you're actually performing things simultaneously, okay? So not running things at once at the same time, but splitting it and putting them in some kind of a relation, okay? Parallelism, just to emphasize, simultaneous execution. Concurrency, composition, okay? Actually, I don't think it's like the best way to show that, but at least you see a difference, right? Okay? I'm way off, I know. Okay. You guys are willing to stay. Okay. Okay, so the composition is basically about interaction between these split chunks. If we wouldn't have an interaction, it would fail. You know, we wouldn't even have a parallelism there going on. So interaction is key here, right? Interaction, communication. So as I said before, Python can do that, Java can do this, but Go is designed for concurrency. That's an illustration, pretty quick, if you guys want. So, concurrency, single thread. No, there's no concurrency, it's a thing, single thread. You have an input, we do something with it, there's a task doing, and there's an output, okay? Fine, single thread, no big deal, right? That's what we do with PHP all the time, and probably other languages. Well, we can put another CPU there, cool. No task, no parallelism, nothing, it's not gonna help. So let's put another task there. Well, that's cool, but what happens here, what happens there? There's a bottleneck. If you have these two things, these two guys accessing that, you know, shared data, and putting, you know, talking to the same target at the same time is gonna get us into trouble, okay? Yeah, you can go for that. It's concurrency. You can split this, you know, have the same flow twice. So that's already concurrency. And luckily, it's already parallelism. Okay? It might be. Might be. If we would be using two different CPUs here, of course. Okay? Let's get another model there. So this is about composition, right? We have, like, let's say, what happens. If that input is a, I don't know, but web content that you want to put into a browser, okay, at the end. So there's a lot of things going on, right? There's a lot of steps, marshalling or compression, decompression, whatever you can think of. So why just having one task, one set of tasks? Let's just split this into multiple tasks, right? Okay, and they can be sequential right now. I'm not talking about different CPUs here, okay? It can be sequential. But that's composition already. That will be parallelization, but we need to have more CPUs then, okay? Let's get another model. What happens if I split this by saying there's this task going on, it's grabbing this, doing some jobs, whatever, it's putting there. That thing, it's kind of dumb. It's not very much, you know, very realistic here, all right? Because that pretty much is the same stuff like there because of the task doing the same. It's the same task, right? What I want to show is that there is another model to split this, okay? You can do something, you can put it somewhere, you can do the same and put it there, okay? That's why the task is always task number one, because the job of that one is take it from here, put it there. Take it from here, put it there. Okay, replaceable. Okay, more throughput, same model. And we can combine that, okay? I mean, it decreases the responsibility of these small tasks. And it makes the work quicker by introducing more, okay? Okay. Clear. So what's the conclusion? So many ways to split this. We have to split first and think about the architecture, about the distribution of our tasks. And concurrency is about design. You can parallelize later on, but that's it. Okay, guys, I have like 12 other. I'm not going to show it to you because you will find out yourself. Basically, what I'm going to show, what I'll be, you know, happy to show you is about goroutines, channels, and selects. So that's like, you know, the holy grail about Go here, but we can leave it out, okay? So I would say, do you want to hear it? So let me know. Yeah? Okay. Go routines. It's something like Threads. Thank you, guys. Something like Threads, but cheaper in terms of memory consumption. Okay, it's designed so there's like a lot of hidden logic there that no one's willing to expose. Multiplex across all. Oh, can you read that? Okay, this is just an example of a Go routine. Okay, how to trigger Go routine? That's the keyword here. Okay, you set that in front, and you get a new thread launched. Okay, so as soon as you do that or do this, you're gonna have like two Go routines going on here. That's it, and they run independently. There's an issue about that, making them run independently. I'll discuss that. Or let me put it like this. Channels. Think of what I said before, the synchronization between these tasks or whatever. With Go, you can create a new channel. And within the Go routine, you can assign something to the channel, okay? And that is blocking. That means that there's nothing else going to happen as long as, or until that channel is being read, okay? So that's the communication and the organization of, you know, different threads in that case, because that's like the sub-thread or the Go routine thread communicating with the main thread. In that case, okay? So main thread will be waiting for this to happen. Or the execution will be waiting for this to, you know, to be assigned here. There's also ways to, you know, to buffer your channel, to place more, okay, at the same time, and to read more. If you wanna, let me show it first. So if you wanna organize like further steps dependent to the channel or dependent to your Go routine. You might think of many things being spawned at the same time and you want to somehow organize your later flows, okay? So that's why you use the select, because you can, with that select, you pretty much are waiting for that, where am I, for that channel to be written here, okay? There and there, and then while waiting, you can read it from there and you do your action, okay? So if that has been finished first, for example, you will be doing that first. If that has been finished first, you will be doing this first, okay? What happens if you don't use channels? Oh, okay, so think of what I said before with the very first chart. Spawning multiple Go routines, therefore spawning multiple threads, means that you let them run. And your main thread is not waiting for them to end. So if your main thread ends, everything ends, okay? Which is bad, because these guys might take longer than your main thread, right? So in order to solve that, you either use the channels to make these guys communicate with each other because they're getting independent to each other, or if you say you don't want to use channels, you can introduce something called wait group. So you can say, as you see here, I'm creating a wait group, I'm adding two, I'm just iterating it by two, because I know that I'm spawning two Go routines, okay, or twice the same routine, okay? And within that routine here, I'm, okay, that keyword defer means that here is executed on return, okay, of that method. It's quite a helpful thing to do. So a done on the wait group means decrease by one, okay? So eventually, that's what you see here, this thing is waiting for the wait group to become zero, okay? So as long as it's not zero, it's not executing the main thread. And it's helpful if you want to, you know, wait for everything to finish before you're finishing, okay? So what's the conclusion? Easy, powerful. Thanks.